Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The skilled trades will play an outsized role in coming years as the Intel chip factory goes up, attracting more businesses and thousands more to Central Ohio. But the region is primed for both growth, and that means it needs more construction jobs. But the trades will be shorthanded. After decades of pushing a traditional four-year liberal arts college degree as the goal for most high school graduates, the emphasis on the trades faded. Paul Iverson teaches the history of labor at the University of Iowa Labor Center. Paul Iverson, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks, Sam.
What's the tradition of the skilled trades and how they were passed down? Not there wasn't a recruitment as much of a recruitment effort as there was a tradition of passing it down.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a more recent change that recruiting has been more necessary. I mean, it used to be that it would pass down in families and neighborhoods where, you know, your dad was a carpenter, you'd be a carpenter, or you'd have an uncle or a cousin in the business, or your neighbor would say, you know, hey, I'm a carpenter, why don't you come apply, you know? And so just by word of mouth, people would find out about, you know, and so it was knowing somebody in the trades that would get you into the trades. Now with baby boomers retiring and the amount of work that is necessary, it just doesn't work to, you can't rely only on familial and neighborhood connections to bring in the number of tradespeople needed.
And there was another downside to that. It was very insular. It was people attracted people that looked like them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so you didn't see a lot of women. You didn't see a lot of people of color that were in the trades. And the trades recognize that and have actively been working to change that.
As far as the nation's attitude toward the trades, everyone kind of acknowledges in a logical place that these are good jobs. They pay well, and there's very low unemployment in them. What happened? What happened to our regard for the trades over time?
Well, the schools made a shift to academic learning, you know, and the idea of somehow working with your hands wasn't something that schools should be involved. You know, we were training the brain. We were, you know, and so as budgets got cut, a lot of what we used to call when I was in school shop classes, now referred to as career and technical education classes, but that sort of thing was cut in a lot of schools, and a lot of counselors were trained that, you know, for someone to be successful, they've got to go to college. And so there was that emphasis on go to college, which is fine for people that are academically inclined. But there's a lot of smart, talented people who learn a little differently and who don't want to sit around at a desk and don't want to listen to lectures and learn by doing, learn kinesthetically, and have mechanical skills. And it's a disservice to them to try to push them into college when the way they learn, the way they work, what the things that they like to do would fit them into a trade, and they don't even know that that's where they could go.
When the interest in the trades started to fade, I would say it was probably around the 80s. That's when even a lot of university shop teacher training programs were being closed up in the 80s. So I'm wondering how were the unions surviving anyway since then?
Well, I mean, the word of mouth worked very well. And trades have been going to schools and making presentations for years. So they have been promoting the trades. And when they have particular needs, they go out and find people, you know. So it's just that now there is just such a great need that there's been recognized around the country that we need to have a little bit of a different model in how we bring people in.
So where are you seeing concrete evidence that it's starting to turn around a little bit. Are they ramping up vocational programs in school districts across the country? What are you know, what are you seeing? Is enrollment in union training programs, apprenticeships, and so forth, is that on the rise?
You know, I wish I had the statistics on that. Yeah, the what I know is one thing the Department of Labor put an emphasis on recruiting people into the trades and diversifying the trades workforce, and created what they call quality pre-apprenticeship programs. So they register apprenticeship programs, but they recognize quality pre-apprenticeship programs. And at the University of Iowa Labor Center, I coordinate our quality pre-apprenticeship program. And those programs actively recruit people from underrepresented groups, emphasizing women, people of color, and for the Gen Z part, youth ages 16 to 24, people with disabilities, and veterans. And all across the country, there are a number of those programs that are being developed. I was talking to someone from a quality pre-apprenticeship program out in LA, and they were placing their 1,200th apprentice since they started the program. And so these programs go into schools and community groups, churches, wherever people are, and actively recruit people to show them what a career in the trades can mean to them. And then our pre-apprenticeship program has a five-week apprenticeship readiness course where people learn about all of the different trades. There's, you know, people know about carpenters and plumbers, but they don't always know about sheet metal workers who fabricate the ductwork that go into ventilating systems, or insulators who insulate the pipes, you know, big steam pipes or other kinds of pipes. You know, so there are bricklayers even, you know, there's just so many trades that people aren't aware of. So we show them, we teach them about the different trades, and then bring them around to see the apprenticeship training centers and to have some hands-on experience with it, and help them with some hard skills and some soft skills to help them to get into those programs. And, you know, with respect to the Gen Z that we're talking about, when you go in and show people what the real possibilities are, I think with the Gen Z people I've worked with, it's a lack of knowledge of the availability and what would I do to start this, more than any lack of interest. You know, when we go in and start talking to people, there's a lot of interest, and Gen Z, you know, the younger, you know, so Gen Z goes to about, I don't know, 25, 26 at the top end. Mm-hmm. And the people that I work with are smart, they're talented, they're willing to work, they're, you know, they're just as hardworking as other generations. They just don't know what's out there and have a little bit of cynicism about the workforce because they've seen with their parents and others how employees are treated at most places that they work, and they don't know that there's an alternative.
Is there union representation has gone down significantly, obviously, since the 1940s and the 1970s especially? Is there aversion to the union involvement, the organized labor piece of this, have you found?
No, not at least not that people express to me.
Uh-huh.
And the programs that we deal with, registered apprenticeship programs, are jointly trusteed apprenticeship and training funds. So there's an equal number of union representatives and contractor representatives on the committee that controls the fund.
In your particular group, in your organization,
or in the registered apprenticeship programs that we work with.
Understood.
So it's not just this is the union program. This is the joint program of the union and the contractors, where these employers have decided to invest in you. And a lot of people can't believe that that's true, that somebody's gonna actually invest in you, and that you can go through a 3 to 5 year apprenticeship program and have no student debt and have a job that can support you and your family.
I know somebody who did a four-year degree in college and then decided to go into the trades. They face a five-year apprenticeship program. They say it's worth it. I asked them, do you regret going to college? And they said they didn't, that they find that they're a lot more mature and more grounded than a lot of their peers in the apprenticeship program.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's one thing that I will say with the age of Gen Z. Talking about, well, not a lot of them are going into the trades. Historically, the average age for starting an apprenticeship is somewhere between 27 and 30.
Okay.
You know, often people try something else and say, you know what, this isn't working for me. I need something else. Like, for instance, in our last, pre-apprenticeship program this spring, there was a woman who was a 911 dispatcher. She had a good job, but she said, I don't like sitting at a desk all day answering phones and dispatching people. You know, I like to work with my hands. I like to get up and walk and do things. And she's now a pipe fitter apprentice. And the contractors love her, and she loves it, you know. And so it's just not the typical person that would end up going to pipe fitters, but, you know, going with our program, was able to bridge that gap. You know, Gen Z hasn't quite reached the age where a lot of people go for their second choice. But that is one thing that when you actively recruit and show people that, look, you can be 22 years old, no student debt, and you're making $80,000 a year as a journey worker or a pipe fitter, that's like, really? You know, and it's not like winning the lottery. It's something that you can do if you apply yourself and you have the talent and the will to do it.
It's not just showing up for a job either. There are classes involved in a lot of them.
Right. So what apprenticeships do is you have classwork about 160 hours a year, about 40-hour weeks. But most of your education, about 1,800 hours a year, is on the job. And so you're paid, you earn while you learn. You're paid for the work that you're doing, but that's also, you're not working on your own, you're working with a journey worker, and you're learning the trade as you work. And so you're making money. Not only are you not paying for school, you're making money while you're going through the apprenticeship.
And you usually have a health care benefit and a pension fund started and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. From day one, I mean, 18-year-olds fresh out of high school don't really care that much about pensions. But, you know, you get that started right away. You got 30 years into the pension when you're 48 years old. If you decide you want to do something else at that point, you've already got a vested pension. And you've built yourself a great career.
What does the shortage mean kind of writ large for the American workforce and the infrastructure that we need to build in coming years? I mean, in Central Ohio, it's going to be ginormous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the good news is we will figure out a way to recruit the people. And so some of it is things like these pre-apprenticeship programs to get new people that, you know, a pool of talent that you wouldn't normally see you and bring them in. There is so much work to be done that, and it's so important that it be done, that it's not that they're not going to do it. It's going to be done. They'll need the workers. So we will figure out a way to recruit the workers.
When you say that they've got to go out and recruit and the things they've got to do to recruit, and you tell them, you make this investment, you don't have student debt, you're going to be making 80 grand a year, blah, blah, blah. I mean, is that enough for everybody? Because a lot of people see the skilled trades, as we talked about earlier, as primarily white male. And when you talk about recruiting,
that's what we're changing.
Well, how? Yeah. Because when you walk onto a workplace, it's still mostly men, but by far, I mean, vastly more men. So what is the selling point to women, people of color, that kind of thing, that not only are you going to make that money and walk away debt-free after 4 or 5 years of an apprenticeship, but you're going to be welcome and you're going to feel at home and see other people like you?
Yeah, and that's one of the things we talk about in the pre-apprenticeship program. And so there's one thing to help our pre-apprentices to be able to get into the program, but we also deal with unions and contractors on diversity training, you know, that you have to be welcoming to people. And so, and but we also have an Iowa Women in the Trades Network. We're starting a Black Construction Workers Network. So we do also have, you know, once they graduate, it's not as if we just forget about them. We continue to support them at least through the first half of their apprenticeship. And so then there are, you know, so they have other people that they can talk to about, okay, how do you deal with this? You know,
okay,
things like, how do you find work gloves that fit if you're a woman, you know, but things that, you know, and so we help with support groups and ongoing support to help them through that. And yeah, it is a culture change. But one thing I find about tradespeople, those that are out in the field, they are working hard. You know, they have to produce, they have to be efficient to justify the wages they're making. So what they really care about is somebody on their crew that is gonna pull their weight, is gonna hold up their end. And once so they may have an initial reaction to somebody, but once they see that in the crew, they're working, they're doing their job, they're diligent, I don't have to do extra because of them.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're helping me, then any initial reactions go away pretty quickly. That people see, okay, this guy's just a good worker. This woman is just a good worker. I like to have that person on my crew.
Let's see, Robert in Franklin, you're in on the air. Robert, welcome.
Actually, Fairfield County.
Fairfield County. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my experience is that I have three sons. Two went the traditional college route, and one went to a trade school. And the young man, my son, who went to the trade school, he went to UNOH here in Ohio in diesel mechanics, got out in 2 years with a degree in diesel mechanics. And before he left, he had a job, and his first year, he didn't quite pull down $80,000, but it was pretty damn close. And as a 20-year-old, that's not bad. Yeah. So I'm just a huge fan of the trades, and I'm glad you have the program on.
Great. Well, thanks, Robert. And your other two sons went to through a traditional college routine, and they're happy with what they did.
Oh, yeah. They're engineers. So, yeah. And the middle one could have been an engineer, but he said, Dad, I am not sitting in a cubicle for the rest of my life. So, there you go.
Okay. Well, Robert, thanks a lot for that call.
Thanks.
You bet. Paul Iverson, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Paul Iverson is a labor educator at the University of Iowa Labor Center. He is working to get more people interested in the trades, the skilled trades. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation. We're looking at the decline in interest in the skilled trades and the impact of that and how the trades are working to attract more interest in those careers. Plumbers, carpenters, electricians, pipe fitters, you name it, there's all kinds of them. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're looking at the decline in interest in the skilled trades, the impact and how the trades are working to attract more interest in careers, everything from plumber to carpenter to electrician and beyond. Kelly Harrop is Outreach Director for the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, which represents 19 affiliated unions and district councils. Kelly Harrop, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And Taria Smalls is the business manager and financial secretary treasurer for the Washington, D.C. Local 5 Plumbers. It's a training facility for plumbers and pipe fitters in Lanham, Maryland. The recruitment program there is emblematic of similar efforts across the country. Taria Smalls, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
What is the message you're trying to get out to Rhea Smalls when it comes to attracting younger people, I should say, to the trades?
For a long time we were the alternative to college, but I think right now we should be right in line with college, because this is a primary, this should be a primary secondary education option for young individuals and second chance or adults that are looking to switch careers or whatever, because it's debt free. It's a skill trade. It's an essential trade. And that's what we're promoting. That's the message that the building trades or construction trades as a whole is a true career when you're doing it with organized labor.
How are you working to attract people of color and women and other people in marginalized groups to the trades?
Well, I think that's where really the boots on the ground efforts really come in. You really have to get out in the community, partner with your local county efforts as far as Chamber of Commerce, whether it be women's groups, whether it be whatever organization. It's no cookie cutter model to really get that done, because that is a, like you just mentioned, it's a minority group. So you really have to like get out in the streets and figure out where everyone is, what's going on, and how can we help through the National Building Trades as it pertains to women. We have what we call Women Build Nations, which is a huge conference that happens once a year. That is an awesome event that really allows a lot of camaraderie between women in the trades and really kind of exposes what could happen for women in the trades and how it could be beneficial to them and their families. So that's one particular effort on a national scale that happens through the MCA, which is the Mechanical Contractors Association, or MCAMW, some people may know it. They have WIMI, which is another women focused group that happens on a pretty frequent basis throughout the year, and conferences. So that's, it's really, really like not making excuses and getting out there and talking to the people.
What about the LGBTQ community? Because that's another marginalized group that is probably underrepresented, or at least overtly underrepresented.
Well, I think the biggest thing about that is when you start recognizing Black, Brown, Hispanic, women groups, all the above, you kind of catch that group right in there, because the LGBTQ community, I don't want to miss any alphabets in there.
I hear you.
But I think when you start talking to everyone, you capture that group, because they're represented in every arena. It's one of those things to where, like I tell our membership and community leaders all the time, we're just looking for individuals that are willing to learn and have a will to work. It doesn't matter who you identify or what you identify with. We just want the best possible people to do the work.
I'm interested in both of your thoughts about how the pandemic changed the paradigm for the skilled trades. Kelly Harrop, what about where you sit? Did you see any kind of change? People kind of sat back on their haunches a little bit and had some time to think about, what do I really want to do with my life?
Yeah, I think there was definitely a change in ideology when it comes to the trades, specifically because here in Ohio, trades workers were deemed necessary employees throughout the pandemic. So I think the ability to provide that consistent employment is something that was really appealing to a lot of people that found themselves either unemployed or underemployed during the pandemic. And that's something that we're making big efforts to and capture those people in our outreach efforts.
You know, I mean, just the idea of being able to do something mechanical has been underplayed, and the value of that. I was talking to somebody the other day whose son's a barista, but he's also going to a 2-year school to learn how to repair whatever those machines are at Starbucks. That there's a shortage of people that know how to just even repair those machines. And I'm wondering, Rhea Smalls, what the impact, the ongoing impact is of having so many shop programs, mechanics programs, shops, classes, that kind of a thing, eliminated from school districts, what kind of impact that's had?
That's had a huge impact. I remember when I was coming through, there were the vocational hubs in the county to where you could go to vocational schools, and pick up a skill of some sort, or at least be exposed to it. That's had a huge impact. That's had a huge impact, because I think what happened was there was a concentration put on straight line college, if you will, and the trades or the alternatives, I should say, were exposed to the latter half of the graduating class. But that has a huge impact on it because young men and women are not exposed to the potentials of skilled trades outside of high school.
You attended college on a football scholarship, and then worked in corporate America. I'm interested in that because that might be another place to tap, but a lot of people think of the trades as something you get into when you're just younger.
Yeah, I was blessed enough to be talented enough to gain a scholarship to attend the University of Tennessee on a football scholarship. And when I got done, I did education for 1 year, literally 1 year. And the W-2 wasn't encouraging at the end of that year, so I moved on to corporate America. I did sales and marketing for a period of time. And in 08, when the economy kind of slowed down and took that stop, that's when everything, you really figured out what was essential. You really figured out what was essential. I was blessed enough that my dad was a machinist, a blue-collar worker. He worked in organized labor, and I knew the importance of union labor. So I kind of took a step back to move forward. And that's what got me into the trades, and it's been good for me. It's been the best decision I've made. It's provided an opportunity for me to reach out to the community, and help others, but not only that, help the individuals within our local union and organization.
Kelly Hereup, what is there any numbers we can associate with diversity in the trades? Do we know, how it's changed over time?
Yeah, absolutely. So the trades are continuing to get more diverse as we make very intentional efforts to reach out to communities that have been underrepresented of the trades in the past, mainly people of color and women. But I always, the number I like to throw out, especially when it comes to the trades, is that built into our collective bargaining agreements is an assurance that everyone, no matter the work they're doing, is getting paid equal. So I think we often hear that 70 cents on the dollar figure for women, or even lower for women of minorities. And that's something that you're guaranteed equal pay for equal work in the trades. And I think that is one of our biggest talking points when we go out and discuss with these minority communities what a career in the trades really could mean, because it equalizes the playing field for everyone.
It's that's the benefit of the unions, right, Taria Smalls?
Yes, it is. It is, like she mentioned, the CBA is huge, and a lot of people don't understand what that CBA does for individuals. And the easiest way for me to put it, it's that's your terms and conditions across the board as it pertains to pay, job conditions, and everything, that allows the individuals that participate in that CBA to know that no matter where they are or where they're working, the terms and conditions will not change and it should not change. And if they do change, they do have rights and they can speak on it. So it creates a sense of pride when a man or a woman can go to work and know that I have rights. You can't just do anything and change the rules whenever you want, and treat me however. And I think that's a lot of what impedes the progress in the workforce. Men and women that really do the work don't feel like they have a say or they have rights because the optics are you need this job. You have to work here or you're out in the streets. And a collective bargaining agreement or organized labor gives you the ability to have some integrity about the work in the organization that you're a part of.
When it comes to the training programs, the apprenticeship programs themselves, I'm interested in how they actually work. And are they strictly technical focused, or are there soft skills embedded in these? Taria Smalls, I'll start with you.
Yeah, 100%. Learning the trade or learning what the actual trade is, I'll speak specifically to my particular trade, and the building trades as a whole. everything that you see that's built or designed has to have individuals behind the computer in some way, shape, or form. And what we do, first off, our program is a five-year program in which, you know, some schools operate at night, some schools operate at daytime. We're a combination within my particular local, but there's math, there's financial literacy, there's investment education. We get into soft skills like project management, estimating, forming classes, general forming classes, new business owners, all of those type classes to expose. Because what we're trying to do is really educate you in a five-year period of time and post your five-year period of time on how to sustain your skills, but not only your skills, if you choose to be an owner, how your best business practices as an owner. And then we want to, through the MCA, continue to further educate you as a project manager, an estimator, or whatever, as technologies and different things change like that in that soft skill market, because technology is constantly changing with tools, engineering, architect, everything. So it's really important for us to invest in our organizations and invest in our individuals that are participating with us so that they could stay ahead of the market, but not only stay ahead of the market, be competitive.
What about in Central? Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But Kelly, what about in Central Ohio?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm privileged enough to help oversee our registered pre-apprenticeship program, Building Futures, which is nationally recognized as kind of one of the premier registered apprenticeship programs across the country. And I think exactly what he was saying was correct. Every, you know, what I tell our students when they come in is every union has their own personality, if you will. And I think it's the adaptability of the trades that have kept them able to be consistent in the job market for the past, you know, 100 or so years. If you want to go to a program that's structured for 3 years and at night we have that option, maybe through our laborers program, or if you want to go to something that's a little more in depth or a little more math heavy, you might be able to do a five-year program through our UA members or our electricians. And I think that gives students the flexibility to kind of screen the programs, if you will, to see where they might be best fit and where their skills and personality are going to fit in amongst all these different unions. You know, when you introduced me, you mentioned we have 19 different affiliated unions, and that really, similar to picking a college, allows a student to figure out where they would be successful and what brother and sisterhood is going to allow them to follow that path.
Let's see, Pat in Hocking County, you're on the air. Hi, Pat.
Good morning. How you doing, Ann?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Go ahead.
I work in the landscape industry, and we've partnered with the OGIA, which is the Ohio Green Industry Association. And as a contractor, the OGIA, along with about 30 or 40 other companies, businesses, and vendors throughout Ohio, have created an event called the Ohio High School Landscape Olympics. And what we do is we put on a day and a half event. We invite high school classes from all over the state, and a lot of these are from career centers and through FFA ag programs, to come and compete in hard and soft skills against each other. So it gives them a way to show off their talents, to have a friendly competition between schools, and to also get in front of a lot of different contractors throughout the state and see that they too can actually make a living in this industry. It's been very successful. We've been running this for about 6 years now.
Great. Pat, I really appreciate you calling in because it gives us a sense about the diversity of skills that make up the trades. Thanks a lot, Pat, for that call. I appreciate it. We have to say goodbye to Taria Smalls. Taria, thank you so much for your time.
You're good. It's 11:40. I have to be gone.
Oh, well, we have to take a break. So, all right.
Okay,
all then right.
So
we get to keep
that
you.
Long, then,
all
yes,
right.
You definitely
Yay.
Have
so you'll stay
me.
With
I
us then.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
I really appreciate it.
All right. Taria Smalls, business manager, financial secretary, treasurer, the Washington, D.C. Local 5 Plumbers. Also with us, Kelly Harrop. She's outreach director for the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. The skilled trades will play an outsized role in coming years as the Intel chip factory goes up, attracting more businesses and thousands more to Central Ohio. The region is primed for growth, and that means construction jobs. But the trades so far look like they might be shorthanded. After decades of pushing a traditional four-year liberal arts college degree as the goal for most high school grads, the emphasis has turned to the trades, which faded over time. We're talking about the efforts to turn that around. Kelly Harrop is Outreach Director for the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, which represents 19 affiliated unions and district councils. Also with us, Taria Smalls, Business Manager, Financial Secretary, Treasurer of the Washington, D.C. Local 5 Plumbers. That's a training facility for plumbers and pipe fitters in Lanham, Maryland. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm interested in both of your thoughts about when somebody does go into the trades, what their prospects are for kind of working up the food chain in leadership and in union leadership and that kind of a thing. Kelly Harrop, is that part of the pitch at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that we want our students to grow and be successful. And that only helps us as organized labor to get groups that represent different areas of the trades onto these projects. And that's something that students, if they wish, can take leadership classes, can take business ownership classes, and learn the process when it comes to what it takes to start one of those businesses.
And what do you think, Taria Smalls?
No, she's spot on. I mean, the information that she gave is spot on. And I think the biggest thing that folks need to understand, kind of like the gentleman that spoke a little bit earlier, one of the earlier callers, there are organizations and there are things that are being done in the communities to educate and provide details on how to progress in the trades. And through the UA, the building trades and different internationals, we have so many resources. We have so many resources to help individuals that want to do it.
Do either of you see the at the school district level returning to maybe at a more sophisticated level than, you know, machine or, you know, auto shop or whatever, but returning to vocational training as part of their curriculum? Kelly Harrop?
Yeah, I think absolutely that's something we're seeing. In our office, we lovingly refer it as the my baby's not digging a ditch conundrum. and we understand why people, you know, would feel that way. But I think we're working really hard to educate people about the wide variety of jobs the skilled trades can present, but not only the variety of jobs, but the integrity of the work in these jobs. I mean, I run a registered pre-apprenticeship program, so we're placing students that have never had experience in the trades before into jobs, and their average starting salary is $65,000 a year. When you compare that to students right out of high school who may be going to college and sinking themselves into at least $65,000 of debt, that's something that is incredibly attractive to students as well as their parents. And I think as we have these conversations, not only is it important to educate students, but it's important to educate the parents as well as to what a career in the trades looks like, especially in Central Ohio when we have these mega projects, if you will, such as Honda and Intel going on, where there's going to be jobs in the locality for the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, what do you think, Taria Smalls?
No, it's really amazing the work, some of the work that we've been able to do here locally with partnering with the schools and exposing the trades to the individuals in the school in the surrounding counties. And yes, there is an awareness that's been brought back to the public schools about the trades and the education opportunities and things like that. So. Like Kelly mentioned just now, I think Ohio right now, I'm kind of jealous of you guys because you've got all kinds of good things about to happen there. And, you know, I know my members, I have members that are chomping at the bit to have an opportunity to work in Ohio.
Right. I mean, there's the mobility piece of that. I wanted to bring that up.
If you're
an apprenticed electrician, a journeyman in, or journeywoman, or however you put it, in, you know, Maryland, you're qualified to work in Ohio as well.
Well, not what the apprentice is a little different because there's no way to really control that education.
Well, not the apprentice, but past apprenticeship. You're graduate.
Past apprenticeship. Journeymen, journeywomen, at least in my organization. It's a little bit more governed, but given the demand, we have a general president that's pretty progressive, and I'm pretty sure he would be open to looking at concepts that did not jeopardize the integrity of our programs to see how we can make things work and meet the demand of some of the work that's being done elsewhere. But yes, there is that mobility piece, and you would be able to be a traveler elsewhere if you had those if you met those criteria.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine you have to go out of state for workers at this point, right, Kelly Harrop?
That's something we're definitely looking at, but not to be underestimated that we're certainly looking to grow our workforce here. I think that's something that all of our large projects, when they come in, they have two questions. You know, do you have the manpower to build it? And is the manpower going to be reflective of the community that we're building it in? And I think that's something we're being incredibly intentional about. I'm fortunate enough to represent over 18,000 union construction workers right here in Central Ohio. But realistically, that's a number that's probably going to have to double over the next decade as we take on these projects. So,
is that doable to double?
I think that absolutely is doable. And I think with the shift, like you mentioned, of skilled trades taking a larger part in school curriculum and people kind of shifting back to, you know, what does it mean to have a career and what does the dignity of work mean and what does the financial ability to sustain my family look like? I think the skilled trades are the answers to a lot of those questions. And I think, you know, there was previously people may have not wanted to bounce from job site to job site, but when we have these large projects that are probably going to be going on for at least the rest of my career, that's some stability that we're able to offer that really is appealing to people.
I think one thing too, if I can jump in real
Absolutely.
Quick, is that Kelly mentioned that I want to make sure that your listeners and everyone understand when we say registered apprenticeship, that's really important. That's really important for folks to understand because you have a lot of private sector entities that create education programs that are not registered programs and may be good programs because I hate to judge other people without having the education of what their programs look like. But within the building trades, within the UA and the different internationals that make up the building trades, we're registered apprenticeships, meaning it's been vetted, it's been we're audited by DOL, like we're above board on all things. And
the Department of Labor. Yeah.
Yes, it's above board. And it's really important to make sure that folks understand you want to give yourself the best shot at education and for the education, you really want to be affiliated with a registered apprenticeship. That's really important.
You know, you mentioned Kelly earlier and you underscored it, Taria Smalls, that the people have protections when you're in an organized trade, an organized labor organization and so on. But what are the protections for people who may claim they're being discriminated against, they're being sexually harassed, that kind of a thing? Is there a process for protection, not just for job stability and pay, but for those kinds of issues? I guess, Taria Smalls, I'll start with you.
Well, I think the biggest thing about that is we have the grievance process, which is a part of how we do things. You know, step one to that whole situation is if you identify yourself as being discriminated against or whatever, first thing we want to do is we want to bring you in. We want to sit down and we want to hear your side of the case. Then we want to step out on the job site or meet with that employer and find out the backstory to it. Now, in regards to local law, federal and all levels, yeah, we do have avenues of pursuing cases through the grievance process that may be outside the lines of what should or should not have happened. But yes, there are protections there for individuals that feel like they've been discriminated, whether it be racial or sexually or any other thing.
Yeah. Kelly Harrop, anything to add?
I think he's 100% right. That grievance process really opens a lot of doors to employees to have equal ground with their employers. And we encourage them to use that process as much as possible. So we're able to really focus on creating the best work environment possible. And I also wanna add, we've been really intentional about adding diversity training into our classes and especially on our contractor side. So people are more understanding when we bring people of different cultural backgrounds into the trades.
And then another aspect of the organized labor movement is continuing education. I think that's kind of interesting. I have a friend who's an electrician, and I'm fascinated by all the different kinds of classes he can take now that he's a journeyman. That's a big part of it, too, and it doesn't necessarily have to be anything to do with being an electrician either. Kelly Herup?
Yeah, absolutely. The trades are always changing as technology advances, as we get more tools to build things in different and more efficient ways, especially on these highly specialized projects coming here to Central Ohio. That's something that all of our journey people are going to have to go through a process and learn some new and different skills that may have not been applicable on other job sites to make sure we're being successful. And I think something Taria said earlier was really important about, you know, registered apprenticeship programs and what that means. But when you have these large national projects that have federal funding tied to them and inherently have laws attached to them about the percentage of union employees that are going to work on these jobs, they're kind of the middleman between these jobs and the government and how they're getting paid. So you really do want to look into these registered apprenticeship programs because they're going to be the ones that connect that direct pipeline onto these job sites.
Yeah, yeah. Taria?
And I think the biggest part of what the registered apprenticeship, you know, for example, here with our licensing for our journey workers and journey women, journey men and women, what happens is you reciprocate. You reciprocate your license based on the fact that you completed the registered apprenticeship and you're not subject to do all of these different jurisdictional testing in all of these different areas because it is vetted out and it's in line with that local rule or regulation for that area. And it's just a matter of filling out the paperwork and picking up your license and paying whatever fees attached to it. So in line with your further education, there is further licenses and credentials that can be gained because you're affiliated with that registered apprenticeship.
You just made me think of something else. Another aspect of this is teachers. I mean, if you have that teaching gene in you, but you want the security of the skilled trades, you could also become a teacher in the apprenticeship program, right? Yeah. Right, T?
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, you know, not to knock on any other international, but our education program within the UA is second to none. And we have some really well-versed leadership in on our international level that orchestrates the educational curriculum that we put on. But you're absolutely right. As you progress through your career and you gain enough field knowledge and whatever else you want to do, a part-time teacher, full-time instructor, however that particular local is set up, you can 100% pursue that avenue. Within my local, we have full-time instructors. Those are guys and girls that have left the field, and all they do is instruct future mechanics in the trade. That's it.
Yeah, Kelly Herup, anything to add? We got about a minute.
I think he's 100% right. If teaching is your calling, we also have jobs for you here in the trades. And I think, you know, just as much as going out into the field every day is important, training that next generation up is also important. And I should add, when we say next generation, we're fortunate enough in the trades to see people pursuing this career path that are as young as 18. And I've seen people that are as, you know, aged as 55 and want to completely change the direction. And the trades are really a great place that give them the integrity to do that without moving backwards.
Kelly Herup, thanks so much for your time. Kelly Herup is Outreach Director for the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, provides essential coordination, representation, and support for 19 affiliated unions and district councils. Kelly, thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much for having
me. And Taria Smalls is the Business Manager, Financial Secretary, Treasurer for the Washington, D.C. Local 5 Plumbers. That's a training facility for plumbers and pipe fitters in Lanham, Maryland. Thanks so much for your time.
Not a problem. And Kelly, if we need help out there in Ohio, let me know.
That's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.